Welcome to the Chamber Connection. I am Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce, joining you on this Memorial Day. And on behalf of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce staff and members and board of directors, we do want to wish everyone a happy Memorial Day and to remind everyone to remember why we're celebrating this day, that many people have sacrificed for us to enjoy the freedoms that we have in this country. And we just appreciate the sacrifice that those men and women have provided us over the years. So today's show is a little bit different. We don't have a guest today, but what we're going to do is provide some audio clips from our recent State of the Economy luncheon. This is our inaugural State of the Economy luncheon, sponsored by Atlas Financial Services, and Andrew Martin with Atlas Financial Services. We'll be hearing from him as a part of these clips. But we had four local experts talking about our local economy and what they're seeing in 2021 and their projections. So we've got Dr. Rick Harper talking about all things economy. We've got Justin Beck talking about real estate, primarily commercial real estate. Brett Barrow talking about banking. And Andrew Martin, again, will be talking about investing. So to get us kicked off, we've got Dr. Rick Harper giving an economic overview of Northwest Florida.
The economic outlook, as I see it, is bright. We had COVID-19, which put a damper, ended the longest recession, the longest expansion ever in U.S. history back in February. A year ago last month, it was 128 months, 10 years and 8 months, longest expansion in U.S. history. Unemployment in Pensacola got down to 2.8%, really, really low. It then peaked in May of 2020 at 12.2%. And today, unemployment in Pensacola is back down to 4.1%. There is still a ways to go because total non-farm employment, which had peaked at 188,700 people back in February of 2020, is now down at 184. But that's pretty doggone good compared to where it was, because in the depths of the recession, we had lost 19,000 jobs. Now we're only down 4,000, and all signs are that we're going to have one of the very best tourism seasons ever this summer across our Northwest Florida metro areas, Panama City, Fort Walton, and Pensacola. So I think the future is bright. And in this recession, short but severe, that started in February and ran, so that meant that the first and second quarters of 2020 were the recession. We began to recover then. And the depth of the recession was profound. But now the U.S. Congressional Budget Office is projecting a swoosh-shaped recovery, and we are well on track for that. The $1.9 trillion stimulus package that just passed Congress, the American Recovery Act, is juicing the economy, as it were, pouring gas on an already warming economy. And what we will see is that swoosh-shaped recovery will take us above full employment. It'll take us above the long-run trend rate of growth of GDP. And so over the next year, we will hit our pre-recession GDP later this year. So that's the great news. Remember how after the financial crisis, the Great Recession, that was an 18-month-long recession, and we didn't get back up to full employment GDP for several years after that.
So some great information from Dr. Rick Harper, encouraging to hear, and all the signs that we're seeing showing that 2021 is going to be a strong year, a good recovery, and got to keep the momentum rolling. So next we have Brett Barrow with Renaissance Bank, who's going to give us a banking overview for Northwest Florida.
And so if I could just, you know, leave everyone with one factor, and that is Despite the unprecedented impact of COVID, the banking industry is stronger, much stronger than it was when we emerged from the financial crisis in 2008. Our capital levels are all strong and upheld during the pandemic. You know, economic outlook is strong, like Rick mentioned. And I think, personally, pent-up demand from all of these closed doors will really, really drive growth once the economy begins to open. So all of these things are very positive factors, you know, influencing our outlook, and I am excited to be a part of it.
Again, positive comments from the banking industry and, you know, looking for a strong 2021. Another component of our inaugural State of the Economy was looking at real estate, primarily commercial real estate, and we had Justin Beck with Beck Partners provide an overview of the commercial real estate market.
The office market, despite the pandemic, the Pensacola's office market has done exceptionally well throughout the entire pandemic and moving into 2021. Vacancy rates have really stayed steady at about 4 to 5%. That is well below the national average. And you can point to a few different reasons for that. One being in the state of Florida, where we've kept the economy open for the most part, as well as Escambia County and City of Pensacola doing leadership, doing what they can to keep the economy open as well. More importantly, though, Pensacola has traditionally been a very tight market. We've never developed a tremendous amount of office space, and it's always been a muted, speculative office development. So that has really served us well during the pandemic. As far as office investment sales go, it's been pretty steady. Cap rates have, which is a measure of value that investors put on properties, has stayed fairly stable, with the exception of the medical office investment sector, which has done really, really well over the past several years and continues to do so. Pointing to, if you drive around town and you notice our major hospital systems are developing offices off of campus, outside of the hospital, that there's a tremendous amount of investor demand for those type of properties.
So again, good news about our commercial real estate market here locally. Unlike some other parts of the country that are dealing with people not coming back to work, we are staying strong and, again, looking good in 2021 and moving forward. Next, we'll hear from Justin again. We didn't have anything about the residential real estate market, but Justin did touch on the multifamily apartment situation here in Northwest Florida.
Finally, with multifamily apartments, I don't think it's a stretch to say that we're on somewhat of a housing crisis as far as the rental market goes in this community. And when you go into the B and C class apartments, rental rates have jumped tremendously. Occupancy rates are extremely high. And the only concern is what Dr. Harper talked about with that K-shaped recovery. The properties are experiencing some delinquencies, and we do have the eviction moratorium that we're dealing with. So collections have been something to deal with. However, occupancy rates are tremendous. Rental rates are exceptional. It's not unusual to see as much as 10, 15, 20% annual rent increases in multifamily apartments in this community. And as you go up the class, that Class A may not be that much, but it's not unusual for that to be a 5 or 6%, 5 to 10% annual. So that's a really strong increase in housing costs for this area. And knowing that construction costs are increasing as well, it's difficult to develop affordable housing. It's very, very difficult to do that. So I don't see that changing anywhere. But specifically in Pensacola, as far as apartment investment goes, we're somewhat of a bargain compared to the Destin Panama City market, where kind of average investment price per unit would be in excess of $150,000 a unit. In Pensacola, it's probably averaging $120,000. So from an investor standpoint, Pensacola is still a little bit of a bargain. Overall picture, very, very strong. There's tremendous amount of capital and tremendous amount of demand. And as investors that have been focused on larger markets, Atlanta and Dallas, are getting priced out of those. We're seeing more investors come into the Pensacola market, and I expect to see that to continue.
Now we're going to hear from our sponsor, Andrew Martin, who will discuss what's happening with some proposals in Washington, D.C., how you may need to be thinking about taxes and the changes that may be coming here in the future.
On the tax side, since nobody has hit on it yet, and Dr. Harper and I, again, discussed this a little bit during lunch, that there are some proposed tax changes, which might affect everything from the stock market to your personal situation. Now, I will say, with any administration, what they say they want to do and what they are able to do are often two different things. So I do have clients that are concerned about some of the proposed tax changes, and rightfully so. But I will often tell them, again, what I just said, what an administration says they want to do and what will actually happen, often two different things. So as we start to get some clarity on what looks like may become reality, then we will start making some changes. But some of the potential proposed tax changes, changes in the estate taxes, changes in capital gains taxes, income taxes, and corporate taxes. So on the estate tax side, the estate tax exemption right now for most people individually is around $12 million. They're talking about reducing that to potentially $3.5 million per person, $7 million for a couple. That affects a lot more people. So they're talking about raising the estate tax from 40% to 45%. So that means that a husband and wife, anything over $7 million would be taxed at a 45% rate. So again, that affects a lot more people. Capital gains taxes, we're working with business owners that the plan was to, you know, sell the business at some point, and they want to make sure to sell it this year to hopefully take advantage of the potentially lower capital gains tax rate of around 20% for the higher income earners, as opposed to the proposed potential 40% or so that they're talking about raising it to. So capital gains taxes might see a big increase as well. And I'm sure you've seen that they're proposing some tax changes on the individual and corporate side. They're talking about the corporate tax rate going up from 21% to 28%. Again, all these things are proposed. What they say they want to happen and what will actually happen, often two different things. But it is something to be conscious of and kind of keep our eye on. And as we start getting some more clarity on that, you know, might be worth taking a look at your own personal situation to see if it's something that might need some attention.
So as Andrew was saying, something to keep an eye on. We don't know what's going to happen at this point, but you know, we might see some changes from this administration that you'll need to be aware of and make some adjustments based on those. So we recently received census numbers for the state of Florida, and our population continues to grow. Dr. Rick Harper was asked about the population growth and how it will impact the workforce here in our community and in Florida.
Florida has, over the 2010 to 2019 decade, we've gotten the population migration numbers in, and there is no state among the 50 that has higher numbers of inbound domestic migrants. We were running at just over a million inbound new residents for Florida over that decade. And international migration as well. Florida is also the highest in the union, and so we were at a million there. On net, Florida gained about 730 new residents from migration per year, but we're low in terms of births to existing families because we have an older population, and so that component of our population growth is not as strong. Escambia is sharing in that growth, and you can see it in the jobs market, and you can see it in the population numbers. Now, having said that, as kind of the bright light, because being business owners and operators yourselves, you know that more top-line revenue solves a lot of problems, right? And more top-line revenue comes from more customers. And so the bad news is that over the last 2 years in particular, the U.S. has experienced back-to-back lowest population growth in the last three generations. Most of that's from immigration has dropped. And then also during the pandemic, we did see more migration, particularly of younger people under 40 who tended to move out of major urban areas. But the challenge that we have is to get our growth numbers back up. I myself think that the solution to that is to turn our immigration policy on its head, and any person that comes from another country to go to college here, we ought to require them to stay for 10 years after they finish, and we ought to tighten up on people coming across the border in the middle of the night. So then we would have a higher educated workforce, we'd have the population growth we need, because it's tough for a country of 330 million people to compete with China with 1.4 billion and India with 1.4 billion. So we need the growth. It has been strong. Florida's been the strongest in the nation, but we do face some challenges.
So interesting perspective there from Dr. Harper on growth, population, and what's needed to keep our workforce growing. Now we're going to hear from Justin Beck and Brett Barrow. There was a question about the changes in people working from home, having to be more flexible with leases in terms of workspace. So let's hear the answers from Justin Beck and Brett Barrow.
There's a term called real estate as a service. You know, you have software as a service, and you know, long-term horizon, you see more of that happening. The traditional office investment world would be, you know, I own an office building and I want to fill it up with a bunch of corporate tenants and they're going to sign 10-year leases and Brett's going to really like that, so he'll finance it for me and that'll be great. But as things change, right, I think that leases are going to get shorter. They're going to want more with their leases, so it's going to, it could look even more like a WeWork sort of situation with corporate tenants saying we'll do this a month at a time or 6 months or a year at a time, and we want to be able to contract and expand as we grow and add people. Mr. Landlord, we'd like for you to have it furnished for us and all that. So we don't want to worry about that. We want to be able to come in and have one of our people use that space and then leave when we don't need them. That is definitely a trend that's happening, and I think you'll see more of. And it's pretty interesting because that could have some real impacts on the capital markets, on how properties are financed. And the banking industry would have to, we'd have to have some deep conversations about how we make those transactions happen. But it would almost look more like a hotel, you know, than it would an office building. So. Any thoughts, Brett?
You know what I think, you know, most people, a lot of people may not realize this, but it is true, is that you know, the regulatory environment or regulation affects banking so much. And I mean, to a banker, every one of them would tell you, I really wish I could do that deal. I really want to do that deal. But the regulatory environment affects that. So I think the biggest change that would help us is for regulation to change, the regulatory environment to change a little bit. And you know, that varies from administration to administration. And so we're unfortunately controlled by that a lot more than I wish we were.
So the final answer we're going to hear is a question that I actually posed about cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and what our experts think about those types of investments and what the future may look like from them. So Andrew Martin and Dr. Harper both addressed this with their answers.
The increase in the retail investors has been, and Dr. Harper might be able to comment on this as well, with the stimulus checks, you hear people, them say that, you know, the average person is taking that money and investing it in their Robinhood account, and some buying cryptocurrencies, some buying, you know, some stocks. So there is a kind of influx of the average Joe taking what money they have, and it makes it a lot easier for the average retail investor to be able to invest in stocks, which is a great thing, but also can be not great. Right. If people start getting too speculative, you ran into that, you know, before the tech bubble and things like that. So that can be dangerous, but it's also, you know, hopefully Some people are going to get hurt, but hopefully through that they learn. And then, you know, any people investing in the market and getting interest in that and educating themselves, always a good thing. Cryptocurrencies, I get asked about that all the time. There does seem to be an increase in the amount of acceptance among people and institutions. Some of the big insurance companies, actually, even the big conservative insurance companies, are buying $100+ million worth of Bitcoin, which surprises the heck out of me. As far as my opinion on cryptocurrencies, I do think clearly that it has a place moving forward in the future. I don't know exactly what that place will be. The only issue I have with it is you see some people kind of the irrational exuberance around it and creating some very strong beliefs and opinions about them, that they're the best thing since sliced bread. And that's the issue I have around them is, and you just can't, you know, there doesn't seem to be a lot of objectivity. So, you know, me doing what I do for a living, I have to have some good data to be able to create some theories. And I don't feel like I have enough with those to be able to do that. But I do think there's a place for them. I don't know what that place is. It's certainly popular, at least for the time being. That might wane at some point.
You know, I would have made a lot of money if I had bought Bitcoin a number of years ago. I certainly didn't have any interest in it, and I continue to not have any interest, so maybe it's going to continue to do well. But, you know, cryptocurrencies if you look at Bitcoin and Ethereum, are particularly inefficient because you've got to have masses of expensive computing power using up scarce resources and creating carbon pollution into the atmosphere to run the mathematical equations that you have to do to be a successful Bitcoin miner. And so in terms of a currency, it has none of the characteristics that you'd like to see in a currency, that it's not a good store of value because it fluctuates a lot. It's not a good unit of account because you don't know that if it takes you one Bitcoin today to buy a BMW, is it going to take you two tomorrow or a half tomorrow? Those are characteristics that you need in a day-to-day currency. It has to be divisible, easily divisible. You know, we don't use gold because it's so hard to make change. And so for those reasons, I don't think that Bitcoin has a future, much less because national governments, you know, it only costs about 25 cents to make a $100 bill, right? You've got to get some high-quality paper and threads and a hologram installed and print the thing. But really, it's very, very cheap to manufacture a $100 bill. And if you think that the United States government and the European Union government are going to give up the right to keep all that profit for themselves, because when they give you a $100 bill at your bank, you have to give up $100 worth of goods and services to possess that little green piece of paper with the hologram running through it. And so we guard that right jealously as the United States government. So I don't see that there's going to be barrier-free adoption to cryptocurrency. But, you know, having said that, everything's going more and more digital. So it will get easier. I don't know what the end result will look like.
So interesting responses there from Andrew Martin and Dr. Rick Harper. You know, this cryptocurrency and Bitcoin might be the future. There's a lot happening with it right now, but it was interesting to get their perspectives. So again, this was our inaugural State of the Economy luncheon, sponsored by Atlas Financial Services. Appreciate their support. Hearing from Andrew Martin, Dr. Rick Harper, Justin Beck, and Brett Barrow on their different perspectives on what to look for in 2021. The good thing is everything's looking up. We're looking positive. So we want to stay on that track, keep the momentum going, and look forward to a very strong year coming up. Hope you enjoy the rest of your Memorial Day and stay connected with us on the Chamber Connection.